I might possibly have a more permanent position somewhere, yes, concerning Native American affairs.
President-elect Trump picks an Alaskan to lead his transition team on Native issues. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Fairbanks' new police chief promotes diversity on the force.
I think it takes a community effort so that those groups, those female officers, those minority applicants, feel like this is someplace that they can come and work.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
A missing Fairbanks man has been found dead. Alaska state troopers say the body of 89-year-old Robert Andy O'Grady was discovered in his truck off the Elliott Highway north of Fairbanks last night. Troopers say a family friend searching for O'Grady located the truck, which had overturned after going down a steep embankment near milepost 24 of the highway. Troopers conducted a scene investigation and have sent O'Grady's body to the state medical examiner for autopsy. O'Grady, who had Alzheimer's disease, was the subject of a silver alert after he failed to return home on Friday night. Fairbanks will see a new police chief next week. Last night, the Fairbanks City Council unanimously endorsed Mayor Jim Matherly's recommendation for Deputy Chief Eric Jukes to become the city's top cop. But as KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the council also voted down any immediate resolution to the continuing police contract dispute.
Mayor Jim Matherly underscored the difficulty in deciding between Deputy Police Chief Eric Jukes and Acting Police Chief Brad Johnson for the top police post. But he advanced Jukes' name to the council for approval, and on Monday they obliged by unanimously ratifying the mayor's choice. But before the vote, Jukes faced questions from several council members. Valerie Therrien asked what he would do to increase women and minority officers. Jukes replied a new woman had joined the force just that day.
I think we've been pretty robust in our minority recruitment, and so I think it takes a community effort so that those groups, those female officers, those minority applicants, feel like this is someplace that they can come and work.
Councilwoman Joy Huntington also urged Jukes to maintain the positive community outreach initiatives his predecessor Randall Aragon had set in place. Councilmember Jerry Norum asked about police morale. Jukes replied it was improving, but there was still the question of the disputed police contract. On that score Monday, the council voted down two ordinances, one by Therrien and Norum that would have ratified the contract, and the other would have honored part of the contract, including a salary hike. Both, though, were deemed too pricey by the council and lacked the votes to advance. However, an ordinance by Joy Huntington to give the police bonuses did earn unanimous support. Mayor Matherly said he too backed the initiative as it would not bind future contract negotiations.
When I got elected, I really wanted to concentrate on mending some fences with the police department. But I do not take lightly, nor do I. That does not negate the fact that the contract needs to be repaired. Mr. Jukes said it pretty clearly when he was up here, and I take that to heart.
In the meantime, the disputed police contract has been appealed to the state Supreme Court. Any resolution by it will be months away. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
An Alaskan has officially joined President-elect Donald Trump's transition team. The Trump team has selected former State Senator Jerry Ward as its liaison to the 500-plus federally recognized tribes. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Ward says his selection was a surprise to him. He's in Washington now to help with the inauguration plans, focusing on Western state participation.
Along with that, I am also working on Native American affairs in a liaison position.
Ward says discussions are ongoing about serving in the Trump administration beyond January 20, when Trump takes the oath of office.
I might possibly have a more permanent position somewhere, yes, concerning Native American affairs.
Ward coordinated Trump's Alaska campaign. He's an Alaska native and was a state senator representing South Central Alaska from 1997 to 2002. His campaign for re-election in 2004 was implicated in a federal corruption probe, but Ward was never charged. Ward was also an Alaska delegate to the Republican National Convention this summer, where his leather vest with Athabascan beadwork set him apart in the massive crowd. Even if his liaison duties are only temporary, there's a lot to do. There are hundreds of federally recognized tribes, 229 in Alaska alone. Ward says he's already setting up meetings.
Well, actually, there's a little under 560 of them. I have reached out and had contact with the National Congress of American Indians, also to the Navajo Nation, who is not totally a part of that organization. And then I have a meeting Friday with representative, a person involved with the Alaska Federation of Natives.
And do you have much contact with Alaska tribes normally?
I would say a fair amount. I know a lot of them.
The biggest tribal action in years is playing out in North Dakota now, where thousands of protesters are fighting a pipeline they say endangers water quality and sacred sites of the Standing Rock Sioux. Ward says it was up to the Obama administration to have meaningful consultation with tribes over the project.
I don't have firsthand knowledge whether they have or have not, but they certainly, according to federal law, are supposed to have conversations.
Trump will have big shoes to fill when it comes to tribal relations. President Obama has given tribes more management authority over natural resources, elevated their status with an annual White House conference, and settled lawsuits that will send hundreds of millions of dollars to tribes. Native American Rights Fund attorney Heather Kendall Miller, who supported Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, was disheartened by the Trump team's selection of Ward.
He has not had any involvement or experience as a tribal advocate or as a tribal representative dealing with governance issues at the tribal level.
Kendall Miller says Ward is better known for his disputes with Cook Inlet Region Incorporated over corporate governance. Ward is a shareholder in Siri and Doyon. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaska Airlines has won government approval to buy rival Virgin America after agreeing to reduce its flight-selling partnership with American Airlines. Parent company Alaska Air Group Incorporated said today it expects to close the $2.6 billion deal soon. The Justice Department filed a lawsuit and settlement agreement in federal district court in Washington. Seattle-based Alaska Airlines agreed to scale back a deal in which it and American sell seats on some of each other's flights and split the revenue. Alaska is the nation's sixth biggest airline, and California-based Virgin is eighth. Together, they will become the fifth largest. The airlines still face a private lawsuit to block the deal. Alaska and Virgin executives have expressed confidence they can resolve that lawsuit, which is pending in federal district court in San Francisco. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, stellar sea lions are disappearing in western Alaska. Scientists want to know why.
The probability of extinction for that western Aleutian population is greater than 50% within 50 years.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. and by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettesworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
A man was rushed to an Anchorage hospital last night in critical condition after a shooting. Two other people showed up at a hospital with gunshot wounds from the same incident. Anchorage police say just before 7:30 p.m., dispatchers took calls of a loud disturbance between two groups of people on West 30th Avenue between Arctic Boulevard and Spinard Road. Police arrived and found the critically injured man on the ground. He underwent emergency surgery at a hospital. Police took multiple suspects into custody. No charges were filed last night. Alaska's petroleum-based economy means there are many opportunities for toxic petroleum-based spills. At least 80% of the contaminated sites that the state's Department of Environmental Conservation deals with have petroleum products in them. Now the department is making moves to update the decades-old protocols it uses when petrochemicals leak into the soil and water. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, Rasha McChesney has more.
In late November, about 30 people gathered in a conference room at the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's Juneau headquarters. They were the first to hear about the department's plans to update its regulations for cleaning up petroleum spills. Sally Schlichting, who handles policy and regulations for contaminated sites for DEC, ran the meeting. She says the overhaul is overdue.
The last time we looked at petroleum specifically was in 1999. So it's been quite a long time. It's been about 17 years.
The regulations she oversees cover spills all along the pipeline route, from oil fields to gas stations to home heating oil tanks. Schlichting says her department wants to update the cleanup levels to reflect more current science on the toxicity of petroleum. Petroleum cleanup is complex. Things like jet fuel, heating oil, and gasoline are made up of hundreds of compounds, and calculating risks to human health is tricky. Schlichting says in the decades since the levels were last tweaked, they've discovered some oversights.
For example, in groundwater, our cleanup levels in the past had not accounted for the risks to children from consuming and being in contact with that groundwater that's contaminated.
So the department is holding a series of scoping meetings. They've reached out to consulting companies, state agencies from around the country, the oil industry. They're taking comments through mid-January. Then they'll go back to the drawing board. At least one environmental consultant in Palmer plans to weigh in. Ralph Holbert says he has clashed with DEC in the past because the complex calculations they require for cleanup don't factor in what it would take to respond to a spill.
They do not like to consider the risks of these responses and what you have to do to clean it up.
Holbert says some of the cleanup methods cause risks that are worse than what a spill could ever have caused. He also thinks the state doesn't do enough to ensure that cleanup costs are reasonable for homeowners and companies who have had spills. Schlichting says DEC gets comments that their cleanup levels aren't scientifically based. During the Juneau meeting, people said they were concerned that more complex approaches to cleanup would be prohibitively expensive. Whatever the department decides to do, it could take a while. After the scoping process ends, the department will spend time researching the input they've gotten, then they'll either develop draft regulations and go out for public comment or hold a few workshops.
We're looking at a year, maybe even 2 years.
And while it's not clear what the new regulations will look like, Schlichting says it's likely that the cleanup levels for some things like diesel and gasoline will probably become more stringent. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is advancing plans to mine Gulf of Alaska beach sands about 75 miles northwest of Yakutat. The trust's board allocated $2 million last month to create a new entity to begin developing the project on land it owns at Icy Cape. Preliminary exploration and analysis found promising concentrations of gold, as well as garnet and other heavy minerals. Trust Land Office Executive Director John Morrison told trustees about the project's value at a November meeting.
This is an exceptional potential for the trust to generate revenue from its land base, and in fact has one of the greatest potentials to generate revenue of any of the trust's assets.
The Trust Land Office manages its property to support mental health services for Alaskans. It usually does that by leasing property or selling resources such as timber for others to harvest or extract. In this case, the Trust plans to take a more direct role. At the mid-November meeting, Morrison said the new entity would explore and develop the property through joint ventures.
What we are proposing here is to take what we are calling phase three, which would be a further definition of the potential resource base and the marketing efforts involved in attracting the attention to bring this resource base to market.
Garnets found in the beach sands have industrial applications. They're used as abrasives or for filtering water. If investors are found, developers would need numerous government permits before moving forward. The property is within the Yakutat Borough. Manager John Erickson says he had not yet been consulted about the project. Alaska's endangered stellar sea lion population continues its precipitous decline. The 2016 survey by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration shows an overall increase in the number of stellar sea lions across Alaska, but a mysterious drop in parts of the western stock. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more.
The big takeaway from this year's Stellar Sea Lion Survey is this. The further west you go, the worse it looks for stellars. At the end of the Aleutian chain, the population is dropping about 7% a year. Lowell Fritz is a biologist with NOAA. He says the outlook for the western stock is bleak.
The probability of extinction for that western Aleutian population is greater than 50% within 50 years. We're down to less than 200 pups produced a year in an area that used to produce thousands. It's gone down 95% since the late 70s.
For nearly 40 years, the western stock has been declining, hitting a low in 2002. But scientists like Fritz are having a hard time pinpointing the cause.
We don't see a mass exodus of animals that we've marked and tagged from these western Aleutian or central Aleutian areas that are declining.
One reason may be the western stocks aren't having as many pups, or the pups they do have aren't getting to breeding age so they can have pups of their own. But without identifying a culprit for the decline, there are poor prospects for the species. Even though the eastern stock of stellars is doing better, Fritz says it's important to maintain populations throughout the animal's range to reduce the threat of extinction. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Anchorage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future that delivers oil today and sustains operations for tomorrow. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical cost. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Juneau is under a winter storm warning, and forecasters are expecting one of the city's heaviest snowfalls in years. Bob Shantz, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, says the storm warning is in effect until 9 p.m. tomorrow night.
We're expecting now a total of 10 to 15 inches of snow by Wednesday evening.
Shantz says the likelihood of that much snowfall is fairly high. He says the storm warning is a departure from Juneau's mild winters and low snow amounts measured over the past couple of years.
Yeah, this will be one of the bigger events so far in probably at least a couple of years.
Sean says residents should be careful on the roads. Bears continue to wander through neighborhoods and knock over trash cans near downtown Sitka. That's despite fresh snow, temperatures dropping below freezing, and now the use of rubber bullets. Multiple calls to the police came in Sunday evening reporting a bear in the Indian River neighborhood. One came at 10:45 p.m. from a caller on Andrew P. Hope Street, requesting an escort to a visitor's car. After helping the woman safely to her vehicle, the responding officer located the bear nearby and shot at it with rubber bullets. Lance Ewers is a lieutenant with the Sitka Police Department.
This officer managed to hit this bear twice with the rubber shotgun slug, and the bear wasn't even fazed. He just kept doing his thing.
Ewer says it's disturbing how desensitized the bear was. He says with the sun setting earlier each day, residents in the Indian River drainage area and around Totem Park should remain cautious, especially after dark.
Please stay bear aware. Please know that, you know, bears do operate at night very effectively at night. They could see a lot better than we could see. So just being bear aware and be vigilant, you know, and hopefully this bear will go to sleep and it won't be a problem.
Steve Bethune is a wildlife biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Sitka. He says bears are usually in their dens by now, but one that's active so late in the season is not unheard of.
You can see a bear any time of year, so just because it's cold and snowy, don't get complacent with your trash handling.
There were negative consequences for a sow and her two cubs in October after trying to bury a dumpster, essentially creating a food cache. Sitka police and wildlife troopers agreed to shoot and kill all three bears. If the bear near Indian River continues coming back to the neighborhood, it will likely suffer the same fate. It's been almost 20 years since large numbers of birds with unusually long beaks first appeared in Alaska. The birds, whose beaks grow at twice the normal rate, often die from starvation because they can't feed themselves. Researchers now believe a virus may be causing the beak deformities. KBBI reporter Shayla Farzan has the story.
Homer resident Michael Craig first noticed the bird at his feeder about 6 years ago. It was a black-capped chickadee, and he knew right away that something wasn't right.
I watched it over a period of perhaps 3 months, and I watched the bill growing longer and longer, and watched it having more and more trouble getting sunflower seeds.
Each day, the chickadee returned to Craig's bird feeder. As he watched, its beak grew almost 2 inches long, about 4 times longer than normal, and it began to look a little scruffy.
Normally, their feathers are smooth and, you know, smooth-edged. It was just rough. I mean, there was little feathers sticking up all over the place. And at the time, we had not a clue what was going on.
Normally, beak deformities occur in less than 1% of wild birds. But in Alaska, researchers have found so-called twisted beaks in over 6% of black-capped chickadees and 17% of northwestern crows. Wildlife biologist Colleen Handel works at the USGS Alaska Science Center in Anchorage. She's been investigating this issue for nearly 20 years. Handel says beak deformities can be debilitating for birds because they can't pick up seeds or crack them open. Birds with deformed beaks also have trouble grooming themselves.
Their feathers will get dirty and matted. A lot of them look like they have a mohawk. They just can't keep their feathers clean. Essentially, they lose their little down jacket in the wintertime and they can't stay warm enough to stay alive.
Handel and her colleagues think they may have finally pinned down the cause of the beak deformities, a virus.
In 100% of the birds with the beak deformities that we tested, 100% of those birds had this virus present.
But what virus was it? Every organism has a unique genetic code, like a fingerprint. To identify the virus, Handel and her colleagues used a computer library of known genetic sequences and looked for a match.
What we found was there was no perfect match for this virus.
That means scientists have never seen this particular virus before. But it's related to a family of viruses that affect ducks, chickens, and other domesticated birds. Handel points out that just because birds with deformed beaks have this virus, we can't assume it causes the deformity. The next step is to test whether birds experimentally infected with the virus develop beak deformities.
This new discovery of the virus is the strongest lead we have thus far, and thus we're really excited that maybe we've actually found the cause. So now the fun begins in terms of designing an experiment to demonstrate whether or not it actually is causing them.
She's dedicated years of her career to solving the mystery of beak deformities in Alaska's birds, but Handel says that's just the nature of science.
it does tell the story of how long sometimes scientific research takes to unfold the answers, and part of it is persistence, and then part of it is also technological advances. So these techniques that we're using now for genetic screening, we didn't have those 20 years ago.
And her research team isn't wasting any time. They're already planning their next study to determine whether the newly discovered virus causes beak deformities in birds. In Homer, I'm Shayla Farzan.
The price to plug in could become a little cheaper for electric vehicle owners in Juneau. That's because the city's privately owned electric utility is trying to expand a program aimed at shifting when those drivers juice their cars. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
For electric utilities, the twilight hours are a relatively quiet time.
The biggest thing that happens is people go to sleep, so they're not consuming energy at the same rate as they are when they're awake.
That's Alec Mezdag, a director of Alaska Electric Light and Power, or AEL&P. He says when you power down most of your household gadgets at night, it leaves open an energy window. Essentially, there's just not as much of a drain from the grid, so it's a perfect time to plug in the city's growing number of electric vehicles. About 6 years ago, the utility came up with a pilot project for 10 electric vehicle owners to incentivize this. Drivers charging their cars after 10 p.m. would receive a cheaper rate.
It took a while to get started, and then once we saw those 10 customers fill in, it wasn't very long before I had, you know, twice as many people had contacted me about getting into the program, but, you know, it was already full.
In 2013, it's estimated there were about 9 fully electric vehicles on Juneau's roads. That number has now ballooned to about 80, and it's expected to increase even more, with the cars becoming more affordable. Last week, the utility filed a request with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, or RCA, to expand the pilot project.
We want to shift when people charge their vehicles so that we don't create a situation where we have too many people.
Mezdag says forming those habits now reduces the risk that the utility will have to build new, costly infrastructure later as electric vehicles start to become the new norm. He expects the average owner who signs up could save about $10 a month in the summer.
And then in the wintertime, it'll be about $12 to $13.
If approved by the RCA, the utility will begin offering the new rate structure to electric vehicle owners in early 2017. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Brass and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rasha McChesney, Elizabeth Jenkins, Quentin Chandler, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Zoe Sobel in Anchorage, Emily Russell in Sitka, and Shayla Farzan in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our producer and editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com. If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.